This is Peter Tubbs of Market to Market. The following discussion is driven by your comments and questions. Keep sending your inquiries to markettomarket@iowapbs.org and watch on our YouTube channel or Facebook page of Market to Market Show.
This is the Friday, January 10th, 2020 version of the Market Plus segment. Joining us once again is Dan Huber. Dan, obviously, today is January 10th, the day that we've been waiting for a long time to see what the USDA did. Can you just give us a general recap again of the report for folks maybe that haven't watched the full show analysis yet?
Well, certainly, certainly. And of course, I always refer to it as the word of gov coming down from the mountaintop, but it, the word of gov didn't deliver us a lot. The numbers were not quite as reduced as much as the trade was expecting, particularly when it came to carry out. The grain stocks number was probably the most bonus we got as far as maybe helping out price activity, as in world stocks. But, you know, USDA raised yield on corn and beans both just a smidge. They dropped harvested acreage finally on the corn a little bit more. So, and at the end of the day, it was really almost a non-event. So, which is not all bad. You know, we don't need to have a shocker every time, and certainly it would be for the pulse of the markets, maybe best not to have a shocker sometimes. So now we can start focusing on things such as demand, on what we can talk about for spring plantings and those type of things. So for the time being, at least, this will not be the final word on last year's crop, but for the time being, it is. So.
And since you mentioned demand, I'm going to take a question here, talking about demand, because export sales, of course, were delayed this week because of Washington weather.
Sure.
We've got a question here from Bradley in Upland, Nebraska. Can corn exports catch up to USDA projections?
It's going to be very challenging, honestly, for a combination of reasons. One, I mean, we're certainly going to have to see demand pick up. I mean, export sales last week were, of course, the record low for the year. Now, granted, it was a holiday week or two holiday weeks in a row, which impacted that. But, boy, we're going to really need to see some non-traditional customers pick up the pace. China's maybe will be in there sometime during the year. But, I mean, right now we're pretty much a Mexico, Japan, Colombia market, and South Korea has not even really been all that that dominant in our markets as of late. So it, and then take it a step further, we have a lot of quality issues on corn in certain parts of this country, which may not make export grade. So there's going to be a question mark where we're going to get the corn when we need to for good quality export grain. So,
and I think that the quality is probably part of the reason basis has been so strong. But we've got a question here from Gary in Wilton, Iowa, wanting to know about basis specifically. He says, why are basis numbers so high? We are right on the Mississippi River in his part of Iowa, and soybean basis is nearly 70 cents per bushel. Corn is low now, but in the fall it was 35 cents per bushel. What's it going to take to shrink the basis? Maybe Gary's an end user there.
You mean shrink as far as improve it a little bit more? So it, and of course, part of the beans, I think the Gulf really got caught with their pants down, so to speak, when, we didn't know China was going to step up and start buying when they did, and we just had nothing in the pipeline. So that really, of course, accelerated the basis levels. The corn, here again, we just have not been putting the bushels out of the country. Ethanol industry has certainly not been as dominant as we would normally suspect for this time of year. I mean, and they've been operating on some pretty rough margins, so it's that's really kind of pulled down the demand. Time will, of course, bring it along some. And yes, as we do see some more of the export business pick up after the first of the year here, that's going to improve it some. But like I say, until we really see this corn demand situation change around a little bit, basis is probably going to be just hit and miss. You know, as we see a spot demand pick up, they'll get hot for a week or two, and then they're going to back away again. So.
Dan, do you see the areas along the PNW, specifically the Dakotas, that are still having corn acres in the field? Do you see the basis improving drastically for them here in the near future?
Well, the basis will undoubtedly will improve, but here again, that could become a quality issue up there. I mean, the basis might have to improve with the PNW to attract corn from other regions, that are going to be able to meet their grading standards. So, that's going to be a $1 million question this year. Granted, the corn's not necessarily out of the field, but also what is out, is it the kind of quality we need to get it into that export chain?
And if we did see the USDA address that quality concern, it's probably not going to be until when?
September, realistically. Mm. So, and again, not everywhere is the same. I certainly have seen it in our neck of the woods. farmers that, I've always loaded my truck this way and it's always 900 bushels. And gosh, this time it's 850 bushels, you know. So it, those test weight issues and the breakage issues are very real out there. So it, those are things you really, particularly if you have not scaled that grain, you're not going to recognize that until you finally get that bin emptied out and get it across the scale.
So. Absolutely. And test weight issues can also be a problem for livestock feed. It's going to be interesting to see what shakes out for them this year as well.
Sure. I mean, and granted, more of the livestock feed, you're dealing on volume. I mean, 100 pounds is 100 pounds, but on the same token, you're using up a lot more corn than you necessarily thought you were. So,
Dan, we've got a question here looking at quite a few different market fundamentals impacting specifically the cattle market from Cole in North Dakota. He said, with the Chinese trade deal, USMCA, Australian fires, and lastly, the high percentages of females going to slaughter, is it safe to say that the fed cattle and feeder cattle will be bullish moving forward? And what do you predict for just the livestock protein sector as a whole for 2020?
Well, the fundamentals haven't stayed relatively decent for the cattle market. I mean, we certainly have not backed up any cattle in the feedlot area. So, I mean, that has allowed the prices to stay where they are. I think the biggest issue, the biggest competition they're going to face is from competing meats. And, certainly if the economy has any kind of a hiccup as we move into 2020 as well, could really throw a little disruption there. The USMCA, certainly is a positive. I mean, should trade into Japan might have a bigger impact on that than anything with the new Mexico-China agreement. But I think the biggest problem is going to come back to the competition between the lower priced pork and the lower priced chicken at this point in time.
And since we're talking pork, Dan, we've also got another question here looking at protein from Minda on Twitter. Why haven't hog futures held up better in the light of so many Chinese comments about buying pork to get to that $40 billion projected purchase?
Well, of course, comments were have to turn into reality. And China has stepped up their purchases of pork significantly, but we also have a large number of hogs coming to market. I mean, we're 6% above 2 years ago. So, I mean, it's just, we've got ample supplies that continue to come in. Packers know what's out there. They know what's going to be coming into market, so nobody has to really pick up the slack and pay for it. Deferred months, are offering a pretty good premium because they are counting on that demand as we move out into the next summer. But it, when we start talking about that $40 billion from China, I think there's still it's doable, don't take me wrong. When you really look at the numbers and what they could import, those are figures that are potentially doable. But we might be exporting them some kind of non-traditional commodities to make that happen. And truthfully, it won't be until after the 15th when we get this signed that really we'll know exactly what that commitment is. I mean, are we just talking about ag products or are we adding in crude oil? I mean, it could be more of a commodity situation as a whole. So, we don't even really know specifically yet exactly what the breakdown of that $40 billion might happen to be.
Yeah, and I was reading something that said we might not ever even know what that breakdown is going to be. They might not release that as public information.
Well, so. It would be nice if they did. It would answer a lot of questions,
yes.
But I suppose that's the prerogative of the government, but it would seem kind of counterproductive not to release it, but here again, it's not our call, I guess.
I guess not. But the other commodity besides pork has been soybeans that I think a lot of growers are hoping China picks up on here in 2020. So we've got kind of two different questions, but I'm going to kind of combine them together, coming to us from Scott in Illinois and also Daniel in Minnesota. Looking at soybean prices for 2020, what are you selling for fall 2020 beans, and are we going to be higher or lower in 6 months?
Well, of course, a lot of guesswork there. I do think there is a little bit of concern when you consider recently China's been back down to Brazil doing a lot of purchasing down there. So, that's always a $1 million question on will they really honor the agreements they're even moving into. I mean, realistically, China has made some very massive investments in South America. Now, price competitive wise, if the price is right, certainly they're going to probably shift more business up here, even regardless of whatever kind of agreement they come to. Something else that you are starting to see, not that it's completely turned yet, but it does look like the economy in Brazil is starting to shape up a little bit, which, if that is correct, you could start seeing the real start increasing in value against the dollar, which will make us more competitive again. You know, that said, it's difficult to think, you know, if unless we're really thinking we're going to lose 2, 3, 4 million acres of soybeans this coming year, I mean, which is not necessarily unfeasible, unless we really think that can happen, and knowing that Brazil is already looks like they're on their way to a pretty respectable crop, maybe the second highest or, you know, maybe even the highest on record. It's hard to think we're going to see a tremendous amount of upside from where we stand already on the beans. So, here again, too, it's if you can see your way towards a $9 bean, maybe it's not a bad time just to have it locked in.
Okay. Dan Huber, thank you so much.
Well, certainly. Thank you.
Join us again next week when we'll look at a job retraining program that focuses on economic and personal development, and Naomi Bloom returns to the market-to-market table. Until then, thanks for watching, listening, or reading. I'm Delaney Howell. Have a great week.